Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and I have been telling you for well over a week now that we were going to be talking about a topic that you would have said, Donna, what in the world would you be even, why would you even be interested in something like this? Well, I think truth is better than fiction. And I received a book that had a note in it, thought you might be interested. The book was titled Betrayal, Murder, and Greed. The subtitle is The True Story of a Bounty Hunter and Bail Bond Agent. And both of the individuals that are with me right now, Pam Puree and Mike Darkside, that's his nickname, Beakley, these are two individuals that are in my own territory, you might say, here in the Pacific Northwest. And wow, what a story they have to tell. It's a gripping book, but more than that, they're fascinating people. I want to welcome both of you, Pam and Mike, to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Donna. Nice of you to have us here.
Appreciate it, Donna, yes.
Well, I'll tell you what. You are two extremely unique people. You have a passion for fighting corruption in a world that just seems to be on overload with it on multiple levels. And I was just amazed at how the two of you evolved. Pam, you are a bail bond agent. You now have three of your own office facilities here in the state of Washington. Am I correct about that?
Well, I actually have one main office, and those are the phone lines that go into my main office. Yes.
Okay. And then you, Mike, you were a former officer with the Tacoma Police Department. Is that correct?
Yes, I retired from the Tacoma Police Department after I got shot in 1990.
Mm-hmm. In 1990.
Yep.
Now, there are programs on television about bounty hunters, and I have a biased attitude. I think a lot of it is sensationalized, and you can tell me what you think about it, but your stuff isn't. Pam, no. Give us a bit of background about how you evolved from being a waitress into being the owner of a bail bond business.
Okay, that's a heavy question, but I think I can do it. Fate took me there. I was dating a man named Mitchell whose friend Linda was a bail bond agent. I knew nothing about jail, bail bonds, anything. I was just a young girl. Anyway, he introduced me to his friend, and we started paddling around, and I visited her at work, and it was fascinating the things that she was doing. She was basically working with fugitives, ones that had missed court. She would get them new court dates. She would dispatch the bounty hunters to go arrest them if it became necessary, and in a world I'd never known before. Mm-hmm. It was frightening. I didn't want to do it, but at the same time, it was fascinating. So pretty soon she asked me how would I like to be a bail bond agent, and tired of waitressing, I jumped at the chance.
Now, this was a woman of tremendous integrity.
Yes.
And when you think of the shows like Mike Hammer, the characters they have as bail bond agents, you know, and so much which has been personified on television is the grunge of the grunge. But the organization you went to work for here in the Pacific Northwest, this is a very significant business, and your associate, she really had very high standards.
Yes, she did. She really did. One of the things the book didn't go into is the incredible hours. I very often work 24 hours straight, 48 hours straight, 36 hours. And sometimes I was alone in the office, so you're trying to juggle people walking in the door and the phone ringing constantly, and your lack of sleep, and trying to make good judgments at the same time. It was quite difficult.
The agency you had worked for had been in Tacoma for a good deal of time. This was not something that was a fly-by-night. What is the general attitude from when you started to today regarding the bail bond situation in the state of Washington?
Good question, Donna. Back in the day, there were very few women. I could list on one hand the women I knew in the field in throughout the whole state. Now I've been told that half of the bail bond company owners are women, 50%. So that's extraordinary. There was a lot of male chauvinism, a lot of good old boys back in the day, which I talk about having to live through. I don't think you really see too much of that anymore.
Good. That's good to hear. Mike Darkside Beakley. Mike,
yes, ma'am.
I used to work for a police department. That's many years ago. And I have a great deal of respect and appreciation for officers in the field. And I know that that was a passion for you. You were honored and respected by your peers. Tell us what happened with you, because you had planned on a career as an officer. And I'll use the word, the PEM used, fate chose differently for you.
Oh, yes, it is. I absolutely wanted to have a full career as a police officer. I loved being a police officer. It was a wonderful job, and I'm very proud and happy that I was able to do that. But in 1990, I had an incident where I got shot, and a bullet pretty much ripped my left arm open, and I'm left-handed. So their pension doctor says, young man, go home and collect your paycheck. I did that, had no choice, and then just happenstance, I ran across somebody that asked me if I might be interested in being a bounty hunter. A local bail bond company in the area, the one that Pam worked for, needed some help. So I went down, met with the owner, and next thing you know, I was off running around chasing guys up and down the street still.
Amazing. You've got a photo in your book of that wound, and it just gives me shivers because it was a major wound. Now, you and Pam got together how? Because you weren't standing in line saying, oh, goody, goody, I get to be a bounty hunter. And you didn't have any romantic notions. You'd been on the street. You've dealt with criminals. You experienced being shot. Your world, you had seen a lot of the dark side. Is that the reason that you got the nickname Dark Side? How did that come about?
No, it was after I retired from the police department. I started bounty hunting. Local bail bondsman hired me, and I started growing my hair a little bit longer and got a couple of tattoos. And I'm riding around town on my Harley Davidson when one of my good friends on the Tacoma Police Department gives me a call and says, Beak, you're not going to believe it. Some of the young guys that don't know you very well are telling us that you've gone to the dark side. You've turned into one of the bad guys. And so that name has stuck ever since.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Now, the two of you, when you got together, how do you work together? Here you are, Pam, bail bond. Tell us first, what are the forms of bail? This is something I've never had an experience with in my life. I hope I never do. And a lot of my listeners have never had this experience. Let's talk about this world, because there are some significant things that are occurring with legislation that's not too positive. Your book really was an eye-opener. Let's talk about what bail is, the forms of bail.
Great. Thanks for that. Basically, when someone is arrested, we're so sophisticated, our jail computers will automatically set a bail. Now, the purpose of bail is, back in the day, let's say, for example, I was arrested for shoplifting. Bail is usually set at $800. What they want me to do is take $800 and give it to the jail, who would give it to the court. That's supposed to be my incentive to go to court until the case is completed. At the end of it, the final, whether I'm guilty or innocent, really doesn't matter. At the final court date, as long as I showed up, they'll give me my $800 back.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens now in today's world? Not a lot of people have $800 laying around. So they go to a bail agent like me, the family does. What I do is I put up my own $800 for the individual, and I charge a fee of about 10% or about $80.
Mm-hmm.
So then what I do is once I put my money up at the jail, of course, the individual is released, and then I monitor them to make sure they go to court until the case is completed. Once they go to court and the case is done, I get my $800 back. What I really give them is not cash, but like a company check, which is also called a bail bond.
Mm-hmm.
And they hold that until the case is done.
Now, bounty hunters. Mike, what is the value of the bounty hunter, and how do you assist a bail bond agent?
Well, what happens in Pam's case or any bail bond agent's case, let's say they put $10,000, $20,000 up for a bond for an individual, guaranteeing that person will show up to court. When that person does not show up to court, the courts will call the note due on Pam. They want that money, no matter how much it is. And so she hires me to go out and pick those people up and get them back to the courts. What it is, I'm basically protecting her money.
Mm-hmm. So now, Pam, excuse me. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Mike.
Oh, no, go ahead.
All right. You say whenever big money's involved, along with it comes the usual slime and degenerates.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, have we been getting a lot of publicity on that level on, you know, so many different expressions out there. But let's talk about the real world here of the criminals. There are people rob, steal, murder, do all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Now, what I found fascinating is that as a bail bonds person, you do not sit in a place of judgment about anybody. This is straight business. This is something that if you're going to put up this bail, then you're not sitting in the judgment seat on anything. And you had, for a while, you had a character named Joey. Let's give a little bit of history about this guy, because he was unreal. He's written about in your book. He's quite a character.
Yes, Joey was quite a character. Joey was the first bounty hunter I ever had any experience with, and he was corrupt. The unfortunate part is not only are there murderers and, you know, criminals or whatever running out there, but there's criminals in every field, including bail
mm-hmm.
agents and bounty
right.
hunters.
Mm-hmm.
Joey was one of those corrupt individuals, in my opinion. He was hired fresh out of prison back in the day. Bail bond company owners thought it took a criminal mind to find one. So they would hire felons directly out of prison to go get a criminal. So it's criminals chasing criminals. Joey was one of those criminals. He was big and bad and mean and tough and used excessive force and bashed in cars, waved guns in innocent people's faces. I mean, he's everything that I never wanted in a bounty hunter.
Mm-hmm.
But he got away with it for a long time until Mike came on the picture and Mike let him go. And that's kind of a long story, too.
Right.
He was
not the only one. Yeah.
Yes.
No, he's not the only one. And that was something that your former friend, eventually she died, and
mm-hmm.
again, it was very poignant to me that she said, you must promise me if you do this that you will handle it with integrity, which she represented 100% herself. And you have pretty much set that standard, and it has it's had a tremendous effect. Talk about a skip trace. What is that?
Well, what I used to do is, I try to find them as much as I can myself. Family members vouch for this person when I bail them. They sign a contract with me saying, hey, I'll make sure they go to court for you. If they don't, I'll tell you where they're at. So I have phone numbers of people that I can call. I have different ways that I can try to locate this individual. And that's what skip tracing is. I'm trying to trace where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then I give the file to Mike to make an arrest. That's the way it's been in previous companies. My particular company, I gave the file directly to Mike, and he did all the skip tracing. He did
mm-hmm.
all the looking for him because he was so good at that, too.
Mike, at one time, and I don't know how much this has changed, the image of a bounty hunter was really, really ugly. Has that changed much, or is that still pretty much the perception on the average individual?
You know, I think it has changed quite a bit, and I think we have to thank our TV friend Dog the Bounty Hunter for that.
Oh, good.
Before he came along, no one really understood what bounty hunters did or how they operated. I hear, and for you Dog fans out there, I got to let you know, I've been in the business, you know, in the bad guy business 35 years, and Dog's a good guy. I watch his show with an eye of somebody who's done this before, and
mm-hmm.
you know, he knows how to find the bad guys. He knows how to work informants, and what they did was they took a good bounty hunter and wrapped a TV show around him to make it interesting. But
mm-hmm.
I think he's had a lot to do with the perception of bounty hunters these days.
When I was reading about you, Mike, I thought, a lot of what you have evolved through is not unlike Serpico. And I remember seeing that movie years ago, and for those of you, if you really want to see some history about some fascinating characters, Serpico was very, very well done. And I remember how he went undercover when nobody else was doing it. And his persona totally changed from the guy in the blue police uniform to one that could pass for the homeless guy down on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing. And, of course, his life was on the line because of corruption many times. For you, when you made this transition, Mike, into becoming a bounty hunter, what was the biggest area you found you had to overcome in your own mind with it?
Well, not so much in my own mind. Well, yes again, too, in my own mind. The biggest difference for me, so I went from being a very highly decorated police officer, well-known in the area where I work,
mm-hmm.
and then once I became a bounty hunter in the same area, working with the same courts and jails and police, it seemed like I was viewed almost as one of the bad guys. It took me a while to come to grips with the fact that, you know, my peers from before, who I admire so much, didn't seem to think as much of me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in my own mind, I knew I was doing the good thing and the good job, so I just pushed through and made it work.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said a word, informant.
Yes.
And you say the informants are the lifeblood of investigations, from reporting on the neighborhood kid breaking windows to providing tips on the most dangerous terrorists or drug cartel leaders in the world. And you, I love this sentence. To be honest, I love snitches.
I do.
I heard that, I read that, and I said, oh boy, this is a different paradigm. And you say snitches often fall into three categories: concerned citizen, revenge addict, and mercenary. Cover those three descriptions.
Well, the mercenary is someone, and I had a lot of those as a police officer when I worked narcotics with the police officer, and they simply want to make money. They want something out of it. So they'll work as an informant for police officers. They're in the drug world. They know all the players. They know the ins and outs, and they do it just for a paycheck. Other people, for revenge, in fact, there'll be a lot of women will do the revenge thing. Their boyfriend is in the drug world and burns them, sees some other girl, so they
mm-hmm.
come in, and to get even, they turn him in, and they will they'll work a case against them, so they get arrested, and that makes them feel better. And then the concerned citizens, like I said, it's just when the neighbor sees a kid they know breaking into your next-door neighbor's house and they tell the police who it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's just another form of informant, but we need concerned citizens to tell what they see and what they know. It's critical.
It absolutely is. Mm-hmm. And a sad state of affairs is when people lose faith in their police department or in the officers that are out in the field, because that... You need to feel like you can be safe in talking with someone, that you're not going to be endangered.
Yes.
And I think that's absolutely invaluable. And as a bounty hunter, you said that your informants may start off as scum in your life, but when you get to know them, they turn into real people, and you actually do care for them. Now, this is a perspective that many people would have a very tough time understanding. You see a side of life, Mike, you and Pam both, but you especially, because you're right out there on the streets. You see a side of people that for most citizens, they'd say, I wouldn't even cross the street to give that person a Kleenex. And yet you know about that person, and you consider that this is a human being here, and this is the world that you live in. It's a fascinating paradigm.
Yeah, yes, it is. It is, but it is... When you get down into it like that, it is the real world. A lot of people go to work, go home, see their families, go to bed. They don't really see that part of life out there, but it's there, and it's everywhere.
It is everywhere. And in the book, you mentioned about the Crips and the Marielitos that had moved into the area. And I remember 1994 having a conversation with a woman. There was a caretaker for a storage facility in the area of Tacoma, And she said she was very concerned because gangs had moved into the area. And this was something she was very much aware of. And the police, she and the police had a conversation about this. And by golly, we'll see the markings every once in a while. In being involved in this environment with these gangs, with these different dark places that most people don't really ever see, they watch stuff on television, but in real life it doesn't touch them very much, how would you recommend that a citizen deal with these environments? Because when they start coming in, if something isn't nipped in the bud, then you can have an ongoing situation that can just destroy a wonderful neighborhood.
You know, and that's tough. I feel so bad for the citizens that live in the neighborhood where this blight moves into their neighborhood, and it's horrible. And really the best thing people can do is get involved with their block watch and their police community services. The police departments are trying real hard to get out there and be in contact with the community and work with them. And the more people get involved, the better it is. It's a dangerous situation, and you know, I can understand a citizen being afraid to tell the police what they see or what they know, but the more citizens get involved, the safer it is for everybody.
I think that's true, because then when the citizens are visible with their concern, and there is the due diligence, and the police department is aware of that, and they can set up that network, it really can help. It really, really can make a big difference. There's a comment in your book, "We know we will never stop drugs or drug addiction. The problems will never go away, and we will never save the world." My goodness, how many billions have been spent on eradicating whatever with drugs? Do you think that that's a waste of time, Mike? The war on drugs, do you think it could be handled differently?
Very complicated question. You know, you've got me on the spot here. I think some of the drugs, the fight is probably a good fight. Other drugs that are so benign, it doesn't make much of a difference in our society. We should just forget about that and move on to some of the more serious things. I don't know the answer to that, Dawn. I wish I did. A lot of people wish they did. If they had the answer to it, we wouldn't have such a problem now, but that's just a tough one.
Well, I personally think medicinal marijuana, the people that are sick and using it for medicine, leave them alone.
Right.
Why spend all the man hours and all that, you know, arresting these folks and throwing them in jail when they're sick? They're not out hurting anybody. The real problems are the heroin and the crack and the cocaine and the whatever else they're going to think of next. Those are the real issues.
Right, and it's the meth labs and all this other stuff. There's just so much that goes on. Again, the average individual does not know, and I think education about that is very important. Mike, I had to have to tell you something. I so appreciated your honesty when you said, "Men are a strange breed. It's not our fault. It's just the way it is, and it seems to be more prevalent when those men have chosen careers doing society's dirty work." I went, yay, this is a guy that recognizes certain things here.
I know we're just a bunch of dumb mutts. I know that. And I'm happy with
that.
It, too.
I love that. And I'm going to finish what you wrote in here. You said, "These guys are all alphas and filled with pride. The initial meeting between men reminds me of two neighborhood dogs circling and sniffing each other when first encountering one another. I'm grateful that the men circling and sniffing is mental and not literal, but it does happen." I just thought, that is so well said. That is just so cool. I just had to throw that in. That's really good. Now, the two of you, Pam, you get, how many cases do you end up handling a day? I know it's not absolute, but in general, what do you have? Because you just said earlier, 24 hours you work.
Yes, very often that can happen. And being the owner of your own company, you can certainly work 24/7 for weeks and months.
Yeah.
You know, the phone never stops ringing. That's the thing that people got to bear in mind. When you're reading the book, especially when I'm bailing people, imagine the phone ringing at least once every minute, whether you're on a call or not. That busy. I don't bail that many people. I'm lucky in the fact that I can pick and choose who I'm going to bail. Some companies just bail everybody. Everyone that calls, they get out. I'm a little more careful because I want to make sure that my people go to court. I don't want to have to send Mike if I can help it. But I would say probably on the average, I probably bail 8 people a day, probably on a good day, on a slack day, maybe 1 or 2. Other companies can very well bail out 100 or more.
Wow, that is incredible. Let's talk about something that's relevant to both of you, to your work environment, and it's something that it's right in the back of your book. And by the way, those of you listening, there are real cases stated in this book. There's no games played with your thinking. It is real life in this book, Betrayal, Murder, and Greed. This is a very good book to read. Pam and Mike and either one of you can address this. We have laws in place that enable the bail bondsman and the bounty hunter to work. I had no idea the impact that your two positions have on keeping criminals where they should be. And this is something that's very important, and I was shocked to find out that the state of Oregon had actually outlawed bounty hunters and bail agents. And this was back, what, 1978?
1978, yes.
Have they reversed that?
Mike and I still work very closely with the Washington State Bail Agents Association, and we're working on trying to get Oregon to reopen that. The problem is that some of the courts are looking at it as a financial thing for them. If they can get rid of the bail agents and the bounty hunters, then they can take in the $800 bail or $100 and add it to the court treasury. That's the real problem. You know, nobody goes out and gets them when they jump bail if they're posting it at the court or at the jail. That is a big issue. And that is spreading here in Washington. Anyway, back to your question. Oregon has reopened or is soon to reopen to bail agents. We were able to convince them that they're a sanctuary state, a fugitive run to Oregon from California, Nevada, Washington, because they can hide out there from bounty hunters, and we're not allowed to go in and get them. Hopefully that's soon to change.
Mike, with the situation, you encounter some real bad characters, men and women both. Because of your police training, your skill in interacting with people, or skills, I should say, it's not just a skill, it's multiple skills, is pretty refined. If someone listening to this show said to themselves, boy, this is something maybe my young person in the family should do, or I would be interested in becoming a bounty hunter, what would you tell them?
I would tell them if someone listening out there has a son or daughter that thinks this sounds exciting and they think they would like to be a bounty hunter, I would strongly advise them to become a police officer instead. Or maybe even go in the military if they're young, but then become a police officer. Get in law enforcement. There's no pension in bounty hunting. There's no benefits. There's no medical, no dental. It's a job. It's not a career. You have nothing backing you up. Go into law enforcement. That's what I would highly recommend.
Public safety overall.
Public safety, yes.
Pam, what do you think is the biggest issue that we are facing in today's world? Actually, you touched on it a bit in the state of Washington. We have so many decisions being made by people that don't have a scope on real life. That's my 50 cents worth of Donna's opinion.
Well, that's a good opinion.
Oh, well, thank you very much. We have people stating that they're going to make decisions about taking the bail bonds person out of the positioning of doing what they're doing, just like they did in Oregon. That impact on the criminal population, you mentioned the word sanctuary, that is really scary.
It is very scary, and it's happening right here in our neighborhood in Washington. More and more the practice is spread. I do go into it in the book in a chapter called Aftermath, Politicking. Neither Mike or I are politicians. We don't like that part of the work. But on the other hand, you know, being in law enforcement, which we are per se, we care about public safety and we care about protecting people, and that's why we do what we do. When the courts are allowing people to post their own bail, when the people don't show up, they pocket the money, and then, to my knowledge, nothing happens. Nobody goes get some. Nobody's looking for them. Now, we're talking about huge numbers here.
Mm-hmm.
I know that basically I bail thousands and thousands and thousands of people a year. 5% of those, roughly, are going to jump bail. Mike, so far, has a 98.9% recovery rate of getting them. What if he didn't? So what's happening, is, and I don't have numbers to back it up, but unofficially I've been watching areas like Auburn, Black Diamond, Wilkeson, the ones that are doing the posting of their own bail, and their crime rate has doubled, and in my opinion, soon to triple. You've got gangs now in Auburn. They're having shootouts and gun battles that we never used to have before. It's a very, very serious problem. I'd like to stop it, and I need everybody's help to help me.
Well, I'll tell you what. Your book, Betrayal, Murder, and Greed, I think is a must-read. And not because of the wild and woolly stories that are real, true-life stories that are in it, but because it is something that makes those people that have broken the law accountable, and that is significant. I didn't have a clue about the bail bond environment, and Mike, I can guarantee you my idea of a bounty hunter was not a whoopee. But it really has changed, and I think you've done the public a tremendous service, and I hope that you will be able to talk to young people in schools or be able to educate others regarding this, and that others in your industry will be willing to do the same. And I know that may sound a little stiff, but I really think it's worth doing. Betrayal, Murder, and Greed, and you can go to their website, Pam and Mike's website, betrayalmurderandgreed.com. You'll get all of the information about the book. It is an awesome read, and it'll open your eyes to realities of life that most of us would not even begin to imagine exist. But it's better than reading a fictitious Mike Hammer thing. Excuse me, I always liked Mike Hammer on television. But really, it's better than this because this is the truth. This is real life. Pam and Mike, I want very much to thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you, Donna. Very much.
And I just have to say that I'm in the process of writing book two. So
Oh, absolutely. That is amazing. So don't forget to get that to me.
I will.
We'll have you on again.
Thank you.
Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Pam Free and Mike Darkside Beakley, my guest today, Betrayal, Murder, and Greed, the true story of a bounty hunter and a bail bond agent. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Thank you.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. If you're a first-time listener, I'm more than delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, all I need to do is have you sit back and relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you might be interested in. Doesn't make any difference. 888-815-9756. Now, by the way, I want to let those of you who are in the state of Washington know the Ren Faire is coming up. Yes, it is. It's coming up the first three weekends in August, and I have 10 family passes available. And so all you need to do, if you would like to get a free family pass for two adults and two children, to this absolutely awesome event, which is held at Marist Farms out in Buckley, Washington, the first three weekends in August, all you need to do is to give me a call at my office, and that's 800-872-8852, or what you can do, you can go to the email and just send a message to me saying, Donna, I'd like a free family pass. I'll need your name, I'll need your phone number, and your address. Put that in the email, and be sure and put in the subject line, Donna, pass, or just, you know, just pass to the Ren Faire, free pass, something that'll let me know what the subject matter is, because I get so many emails, that helps me. So if you'll do that, then you'll be able to get a free pass. And it may sound a little strange, but, you know, doing this, but already the passes are going, and so every time I announce it, if you're in the state of Washington, this is an absolutely fabulous family event. I've been involved with them for almost 10 years now, and I just love the people that put it together. It is terrific. Food's good. Entertainment is awesome. You step through those castle doors at the entrance, and you go into a magical world of imagination. You'll see artisans, there are tournaments, it's just absolutely great. So give me a call or send me an email if you would like to have a free pass. And again, that's Donna at Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, international.com. Send it to me email, or you can call me at 800-872-8852, and I'll get that free pass out to you. Now, I wanted to mention a few facts. When I was talking with Pam and Mike, my guests, in the first part of the show, I just wanted to give you some information that might surprise you. During the last 10 years, bounty hunters have apprehended about 25,000 fugitives in the United States each year, and it's been estimated that they return to custody over 99% of the criminal defendants who skip bail. Now, that's out of Encyclopedia.com 2009. Now, there are about 10,000 criminal defendants that skip bond each year, and that's out of USA Today 2004. Interestingly enough, 40% of people released on bail are eventually acquitted or have the charges against them dropped. That's out of the New York Times 2008. And in the U.S., bounty hunters have various levels of authority and the duties that they perform with regard to their targets dependent on which state they operate in. Every state has its own agenda. Now, a bounty hunter can enter a fugitive's private property without a warrant in order to execute a re-arrest. Now, it all depends on the state rulings, but this is something that many times is so necessary, because they're out, there is a warrant for this person's arrest, or whatever's on the record, and they go and they get them. And Mike's stories are just amazing. Now, bounty hunters, how do they get paid? Well, typically they receive anywhere from 10 to 20% of the total bail bond for payment. An experienced bounty hunter who works 80 to 150 cases a year can earn anywhere from $50,000 to $80,000 annually. And if you watch the Bounty Hunter show, you'll think, gee whiz, that's a whoopee and exciting. But stop and think. They're going to have a lot of expenses, and they're going to have to really be good at what they do. So if you know of anybody that's interested in that kind of work, thinks it would be fascinating, I agree with Mike. I think if you serve some time in the military or as a law enforcement officer, it gives you an understanding of the real world, and then you can take it with you into that world of being a bounty hunter if you so choose. Now, generally, bail bond agents charge a fee equal to 10% of the defendant's bail. The 10% is the bondsman compensation for posting the bail and is not returned to the defendant when he appears in court. Now, the FBI has some statistics. 14,209,365 arrests occurred nationwide for all offenses, excepting traffic violations, of which 597,444 were for violent crimes. 1,610,088 were for property crimes. And that is from the FBI's files, and that is a couple of years ago. So that's not even current with today. So those are numbers, I think, that can be extremely eye-opening. So I hope you enjoyed them as much as I did. All right, moving along, going from that particular level, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Are you a fan of magic? Well, if you are, you know that Houdini is acclaimed as being one of the very finest that has ever been a magic performer on the stage. Well, there's a Canadian escape artist. His name is Dean Gunnarsson. This guy did something that absolutely amazed me when I read about it. This was done in Winnipeg, Canada at 1:26 p.m. on Halloween. It was the 80th anniversary of Houdini's death, which was in 2006. This is what went on. What people come up with absolutely astonishes me. Gunnarsson was bound with several pairs of police handcuffs that were chained and padlocked around his waist and his entire body. And also, not only did it go around his body, they put it around his neck. Ugh. He was then lowered into the box. Cement was poured in the box, and the lid of the box was locked tight with six maximum security padlocks so that he was totally encased in a concrete prison. How did he come up with this? I haven't a clue. That's not all of the story. The crowd that was around him, they could watch every single move that he made because he was in a glass box, all sides, top, bottom, all sides. He escaped from his would-be tomb in 2 minutes, 43 seconds. Now think about this. They poured concrete on top of him. He had to get out before he was crushed and suffocated by the sheer weight of the cement. And this is what he said after he did this particular stunt. It felt like being crushed by a boa constrictor. Now, he had trained for this death-defying ordeal by wiggling around in fast-setting cement. And he said he could feel it pushing against his ribs and his lungs every time he struggled, but he was able to emerge from that box with nothing more than cement burns. Now, where did he get the inspiration for this? It came to him when he escaped by dangling by his toes. This guy's, I mean, really, dangling by his toes from a trapeze bar while he was locked in a straitjacket 726 feet above the Hoover Dam just outside of Las Vegas. Gee, the funny things that will come into someone's mind when you have nothing else to do. Oh, boy. He learned that some workers had been killed while working on the dam, buried alive after falling into wet cement. He said to himself, what a horrible way to go. And then he came up with this idea. The photos that are in front of me are absolutely amazing. I mean, just totally amazing. Now, if you have any kids that hear about this or listen to it, do not do this. Nobody should even try this at home. I am just astonished. This is Donna Sebo, and we'll take a break when we come back. A little bit of this and a little bit of that. 888-815-9756 if you'd like to call in and chat with me. We'll be back in just a moment.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. To Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Welcome, my lords and ladies, to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, located at Marist Farms in Buckley, Washington. For 3 weekends in August, starting August 7th and 8th, we will transport you back to the days of old, where magic and merriment reign. Come see the multitude of musicians, dancers, jugglers, gypsies, peasants, nobles, pirates, and prestidigitation. That's magic for you commoners. Learn to swing a sword or shoot a bow and be knighted by Her Majesty the Queen. Hold your breath as jousters wheel their mounts around to engage in full contact combat on the field of battle. Sign on to sail the seas with scurvy pirates, or sit down with friends and family for turkey legs and a fine brewed ale. Delights abound for the young and old at the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, so come one and all, starting August 7th and 8th, for fun and excitement, and may your day be fair. For tickets and info, go to www.washingtonfair.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with John Paul Thornton. He's got a wonderful book. It's called Art and Courage. This is a young man who has worked with young people utilizing art as a way to empower youngsters. And I think that is absolutely a wonderful tool. And so John Paul is going to be with us tomorrow. Then next week, we're going to have a dynamic week. Well, we usually do. There's some fascinating people out in the world, and I'm delighted that some of them end up on this show. So be sure and tell your friends. They're more than welcome to join us. Animal Angels on Monday will be talking with Michael Rebel about some fascinating stories regarding animals. And then on Tuesday, if you're a woman that really is disgusted, you just don't know what to do for yourself, your hormones are going wacky, you're not going to want to miss Lindsay Berkson, Safe Hormones, Smart Women. Safe Hormones, Smart Women. This is awesome. It's absolutely an eye-opener. Then on Wednesday, we're going to be talking with Grace Jill Sherrison, Zen Women. This is an incredible book about incredible women historically in different cultures and what they have been able to accomplish despite cultures saying, no, you can't do this. Well, this is amazing. And then we're going to be talking about UFOs on Thursday, Crash. And this is written by a former military officer, Kevin Randall. UFOs fall from the sky. Well, we're going to hear about that. And then we're going to be talking with Barry Weiner on Friday. CYA. CYA is a book that his dad wrote, and he was with the city of New York as a police officer, his dad was, and Barry made sure that this manuscript that his father put together was published because it gave a true portrayal of the New York Police Department. So we're going to be talking with wonderful people next week, and I invite you to join me. Here are some things, some little things that people do. So often we don't realize that we can make a difference. And there was one woman, Connie Cox is her name, and this is a woman that's known hard times. She's like so many of us that have had children, and you go through and you clip coupons, you're saving money, and so many of us are doing this today. And she doesn't really have to do that anymore, but it was a habit she developed. She said, I'm a coupon clipper from way back. And she said, I can remember when I was a new mom, I would clip everything I possibly could because if I could save money, that really made a difference. Well, her family's all grown now, but she said, when I get the Sunday circulars or the weekday circulars, I still find myself wanting to clip coupons because people are going through a lot of tough times. Now, this is what Connie has done. Whenever she goes to the supermarket, she brings extra coupons with her. She said, I might not use them, but she has found when she's standing in the grocery store line, there's usually somebody else who could possibly use those coupons. So she said, I just give it to whoever I think might use it. She said, I just keep an eye on what people have in their baskets. And she said, I see college kids that maybe are buying nothing but a bunch of cereal, and maybe I've got coupons for that. So this lady's really organized. And she said, I just give them away. She said, I've got coupons for pharmacy, department store, and amusement parks. And she said, even if it's just a 50% discount, I give them away. She said, I'm a real estate agent, and I just absolutely love interacting with other people and letting them know that somebody cares. Now, maybe that doesn't sound like much, but in her own way, she's passing on a level of thoughtfulness. So depending on who you are or where you are in life, you have an opportunity at any given time to be able to pass along good to someone else, and it makes a difference. So taking time to be a little bit more courteous or being patient or helping someone. There is an ad that's been running on television, and it's associated with a business, but they show people doing nice things for other people. And not because anybody says thank you to them. They're just doing it because it's being polite and it's being courteous and thoughtful. And I thought whoever put this together is really sending out a very positive subliminal message. And it's a good one because each of us make a difference in our own way. I was walking my dogs, as I do every day, and I happened to meet a woman who, as a mature lady, she's got quite a background in working with other people. She's mentoring right now a 13-year-old girl who went through a horrifically brutal environment when she was growing up. This is a 13-year-old girl that her mother would only feed her butter, and I forget what else it was. And then the kids, she had a brother, she had a sibling. They'd go out in the backyard and eat grass just to have something to eat. This is what their mother made them do. Now, the woman now, the mother, is mentally ill. That's very obvious. Why would you even do something like that? But this 13-year-old girl really has had some challenges because she lives in a world of fantasy. And the lady that I was talking with, when I was hearing her talk about the various things that she's been involved with this young person, and she's being honored for her contributions, and she deserves every bit of it, I thought, we never can really understand what somebody else goes through until we walk in their shoes a little bit. And for so many of us, it's incomprehensible that someone would abuse another human being, a child, an animal. I mean, it's just not in our thinking. That's not where we are. But sometimes there are those situations where someone is mentally ill, where there are unique circumstances. And there's a story I was going to share with you about a young lady by the name of Brittany, who had similar circumstances to the young woman I just mentioned. And I won't have time today because we're just about out of time. But it's important to know about these stories. It's important to know about life in the real, real world. Because it isn't a fairy tale. And many times it is harsh and ugly. But when we can see things clearly, then we can also see how we can take corrective action. It's when we evade the truth that we get into trouble. When we evade the opportunity to make a difference. So wherever you are, remember always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Every moment of your life, you make a choice. Every moment. You make thousands of them a day without even giving it a second thought. So try to be consciously attentive to what you're thinking and how you're responding to various issues in your life. And I think it'll empower you as an individual. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be right here tomorrow, same time, same place, out of time right now. You have a fabulous, fabulous day and evening wherever you might be. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.